Ever wondered how a whole country, manages its money on the world stage? How it balances everything coming in and going out?
It's a massive undertaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like this giant, super complex financial ledger for the entire nation. And just like, well, anyone's finances, sometimes that ledger can get seriously out of balance.
Absolutely. Things can definitely tip one way or the other.
So imagine a country, let's call it Xanadu.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it's importing way more than it's exporting year after year. Its savings are shrinking. Maybe its currency is looking a bit shaky.
A classic scenario.
What does Xanadu do? How does it, pull its economy back from potentially melting down? That's our mission today. We're diving deep into this thing called the balance of payment.
The BOP.
Right. The BOP, the country's global ledger.
Yeah.
And we're going to unpack the actual tools policymakers use to fix these imbalances. We've gone through the sources you sent, pulled out the key nuggets so you get the clear picture without, hopefully, feeling overwhelmed.
Sounds like a plan. It's a crucial topic.
Okay, let's start right at the beginning then. What exactly is this balance of payments?
Well, fundamentally, the balance of payments, or BOP, it's a comprehensive record. Think of it like an accounting statement for an entire country's economic dealings with the rest of the world over a set time, usually a year.
Okay, a statement.
Yeah, and it tracks all transactions, not just government stuff, but transactions by individuals, by businesses, and the government itself. It's often said, that globally, one country's surplus is another's deficit.
Ah, right. It all has to balance out somewhere.
Exactly. It really shows how interconnected everything is.
So it's clearly not just one single number. It sounds like it must have different parts, right?
Yeah.
What are the key components of this this global ledger?
Precisely. It's broken down to give us that detailed view. There are three main accounts. First, and probably the one people hear about most, is the current account.
The current account, okay.
This basically reflects the day-to-day kinds of transactions. Think of it like a country's income and regular spending with the rest of the world.
So what kind of things flow through that day-to-day account?
Okay, so within the current account, you've got several bits. There's trade in goods that's often called visible trade.
Physical stuff.
Yeah, exports and imports of physical products like cars, electronics, food. Then there's trade in services or invisible trade.
Services like?
Things like banking fees, insurance policies sold across borders, tourism, consulting, digital services, you name it. Then there's primary income.
Primary income.
Yeah, this is basically earnings from foreign investments. So dividends paid to residents from shares they own in foreign companies, interest earned on foreign bonds, and also wages earned by citizens working abroad.
Okay, makes sense.
And the last bit is secondary income or current transfers. This covers things like remittances, people sending money home foreign aid grants, pensions paid across borders, basically money moving without a direct good or service being exchanged right then.
Gotcha.
And critically, a current account deficit happens when the value of everything going out, imports, payments abroad, exceeds what's coming in from exports and income from abroad.
Like spending more than you earn on a national scale.
Exactly that. Now, the second main part is the capital account. This one's usually much smaller than the others.
Smaller, okay. What's in there?
It mainly tracks transfers of ownership for non-financial assets. Think patents, trademarks, copyrights changing hands internationally. Also, capital transfers like, say, debt forgiveness between governments or international aid specifically given for building infrastructure, like a bridge or hospital.
Right. Specific capital projects or asset rights.
Precisely. And then the third big piece is the financial account. This is all about capital flows related to owning financial assets. This is where the big investment flows show up.
Ah, so stocks, bonds, setting up factories, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You've got direct investment that's long-term capital, like a foreign company building a factory in Xanadu, or a Xanadu company buying a firm overseas. Then portfolio investment, buying and selling financial assets like stocks and bonds, which are generally more liquid, easier to trade.
Okay.
Then there's other investments, which captures more short-term capital movements, things like international bank loans or currency deposits. And finally, you have reserve assets.
The central bank's stash.
Pretty much, yeah. It shows the central bank's transactions in foreign currencies, gold, and other reserves. And a financial account surplus here means more money is flowing into the country through these investments than is flowing out.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, maybe even a bit worrying for a country. What happens when this whole balance of payments gets, well, out of whack? Especially that persistent current account deficit you mentioned, like our Xanadu example.
Yeah, this is the crucial point, because a persistent disequilibrium, especially a large current account deficit, isn't just some abstract accounting issue.
It feels real.
It is real. It can signal that a country is piling up debt to the rest of the world, its currency might weaken, foreign investors could get nervous and pull their money out.
Leading to bigger problems.
Potentially, yes. In severe cases, it could even spiral into a financial crisis. So the stakes are incredibly high. Which leads to the big question. What can policymakers actually do about it? What's in their toolkit?
Right. Let's dive into that toolkit. First up, let's talk fiscal policy. How does the government use its own budget, taxes, and spending to tackle an imbalance like this?
Okay, fiscal policy. This is where the government uses its power to tax and spend to influence the economy. To deal with a deficit, they might look at increasing taxes.
Taking money out of people's pockets.
Right. Or cutting public spending. Or maybe a mix of both.
And the goal there. What are they trying to achieve immediately? And what's the, you know, the downside risk for regular people or for Xanadu's economy?
The main aim is pretty direct. Reduce overall spending in the economy, what economists call aggregate demand. If people and businesses have less disposable income because of higher taxes, or if the government itself is spending less.
They buy less stuff overall.
Exactly. And that less stuff includes fewer imports. So it can be quite effective, relatively quick to implement, and directly helps reduce the demand for foreign goods. It's a classic example of an expenditure-reducing policy.
Makes sense. Cut spending overall, you cut import spending too, but the downside.
The big risk is slowing down the economy too much. If demand falls sharply, businesses might cut back production, investment could drop, and unemployment could rise. Imagine Xanadu slashing spending on schools or raising income tax significantly. It could definitely cause economic pain and public backlash. It's a very fine line to walk.
Okay, so that's the government tightening its belt. What about the central bank? What power do they have? That brings us to monetary policy.
Right, monetary policy. This is typically the central bank's domain, and it mainly involves managing the money supply, and most commonly these days, adjusting interest rates.
Interest rates. So if Xanadu's central bank hikes interest rates, borrowing gets more expensive.
Correct. Higher rates discourage businesses from borrowing to invest, and people from borrowing for big purchases like houses or cars. It also encourages saving. So overall consumption and investment tend to fall.
Which, like fiscal policy, reduces overall demand, including for imports. So that's also expenditure reducing.
Yes, primarily. But monetary policy has another angle, especially concerning international money flows. Higher interest rates can attract foreign capital.
Ah, investors seeking better returns. That helps the financial account we talked about, right? More money coming in.
It does. But here's the nuance, the potential downside you hinted at earlier. That inflow of foreign money, chasing higher interest rates, increases demand for Xanadu's currency.
Making the currency stronger. Appreciation.
Potentially, yes. And if Xanadu's currency appreciates, its exports become more expensive for foreigners, and imports become cheaper for its own citizens, which could actually make the current account deficit worse.
Wow, okay. So fixing one part might hurt another, and higher rates obviously make loans more expensive for everyone domestically, too.
Absolutely. It raises borrowing costs across the board, which can also dampen economic activity. So it's another tricky balancing act.
Then we have supply-side policy. This sounds different. Less about managing demand and more fundamental, like a longer game.
It absolutely is the long game. Yeah. Supply-side policies aren't about tweaking demand in the short term. They focus on improving the underlying productive capacity and competitiveness of the economy.
Making Xanadu inherently better at producing things.
Exactly. It's about making the country more efficient, more innovative, a better place to do business in the long run.
So we're talking about things like investing in education and skills, improving roads, ports, internet infrastructure, encouraging research and development. Maybe cutting red tape for businesses.
All of those, yes. The idea is that if Xanadu becomes more productive and competitive, its firms can produce better goods more cheaply.
Which means they can export more.
Yeah.
And maybe domestic consumers will choose local goods over imports because they're better or cheaper.
That's the goal. It boosts export competitiveness and can reduce reliance on imports over time. In a way, it acts like a slow burn expenditure switching policy by making domestic products more attractive relative to foreign ones.
Okay, the advantages seem clear, a stronger, more competitive economy long term. But what's the catch? You said it's a long game.
The catches are significant. First, these policies are often very expensive. Think big infrastructure projects or education reforms. Second, and crucially, they take a long, long time to work. Yeah. Years, sometimes decades, for the effects to really kick in. There's a major time lag.
So definitely not a solution if Xanadu is facing an immediate crisis.
Not at all. It's essential for long-term health, but it won't fix an urgent deficit problem quickly.
Okay, let's switch gears to something that can be quick, but often controversial. Protectionist policy. We hear about tariffs and quotas quite a bit.
Yes, protectionism involves deliberately creating barriers to trade. The main tools are tariffs, which are taxes on imported goods,
making them more expensive for consumers.
Exactly. Quotas, which are physical limits on the quantity of a good that can be imported, and sometimes subsidies for domestic industries to help them compete against imports.
The goal seems pretty blunt. Stop imports, or at least reduce them, and push people towards buying domestic goods. That sounds like expenditure switching by force, almost.
It is a form of expenditure switching, yes. And it can reduce imports quickly, which might seem appealing if a country has a large deficit.
But there's always a but, isn't there?
Yeah.
What are the big risks everyone talks about? Trade wars, making local companies lazy.
You've hit the nail on the head. The risks are substantial. Trading partners often retaliate with their own tariffs, leading to trade disputes or even trade wars, hurting everyone. Domestic industries, shielded from foreign competition, might become less efficient and innovative over time. And many protectionist measures can violate international trade rules, like those of the World Trade Organization.
So it might offer a quick fix for the import numbers, but it's generally seen as harmful in the longer run, not really sustainable.
That's the general consensus among most economists, yes. It can cause more problems than it solves, especially if used heavily or for extended periods. Usually seen as a last resort, perhaps.
Okay, one more major tool. Exchange rate policy. This feels like it directly targets the price competitiveness issue we touched on.
It does. This involves influencing the value of the country's currency on the foreign exchange market. There are essentially two main ways this happens, depending on the exchange rate system.
Two ways.
Yeah. If a country has a floating exchange rate determined by market forces, the currency might depreciate its value falls relative to other currencies. If it has a fixed exchange rate, the government or central bank might deliberately devalue it, a formal downward adjustment of the official rate.
So depreciation or devaluation, either way, the currency becomes weaker.
Correct. And the effect is similar. It makes the country's exports cheaper for foreign buyers because their currency now buys more of Xanadu's currency.
Boosting export demand.
Hopefully. And at the same time, it makes imports more expensive for Xanadu's own residents because their weaker currency buys less foreign currency.
Reducing import demand. So this is clearly an expenditure switching policy, right? Making foreign stuff less attractive and domestic stuff more attractive purely based on price.
Exactly. It directly changes the relative prices of domestic versus foreign goods and services.
The advantages seem obvious. Potentially more exports, fewer imports, helping the current account. But what are the downsides here? It sounds almost too easy.
Ah, yes, the downsides can be significant. Firstly, making imports more expensive can lead to inflation, especially if the country imports essential goods like fuel or food. This is often called imported inflation.
So people's cost of living could go up.
Definitely. Second, a falling currency can sometimes shake foreign investor confidence. They might worry that the value of their investments in Xanadu will decrease in terms of their own currency.
And pull money out.
It's a risk. And third, if Xanadu has borrowed money from abroad in foreign currency, say in US dollars or euros, a devaluation makes that debt more expensive to repay in terms of its own currency.
Ouch. So the national debt burden could actually increase?
It could, yeah. So, like all the other policies, manipulating the exchange rate comes with its own set of serious risks and trade-offs.
Wow, okay. That was a really thorough run through the toolkit. Fiscal, monetary supply side, protectionism, exchange rates.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the arsenal, but none of them are simple fixes.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like policymakers have these broad strategies behind using these tools, right? You mentioned expenditure reducing and expenditure switching.
That's a great way to frame it. Broadly speaking, policymakers are often thinking in terms of these two main approaches when tackling a BOP deficit, especially a current account deficit.
So tell us more about expenditure switching policies. What's the core idea?
The core idea here is, as the name suggests, to switch spending away from imported goods and services and towards domestically produced ones.
Okay, switching preferences.
Exactly. The main tools we discuss that fit here are things like devaluation or depreciation of the currency, which directly changes relative prices. Also, import tariffs or quotas, which artificially make imports less attractive. And sometimes export promotion schemes.
Trying to make exports cheaper or BAM supported.
Right. Now, critically, these policies tend to work best under certain conditions.
Like what?
Well, they're more effective if demand for both exports and imports is price elastic.
Meaning, people actually change how much they buy when the price changes.
Precisely. If exports get cheaper but foreigners don't buy much more, or if imports get pricier but domestic consumers keep buying them anyway, the policy won't have much impact on the trade balance.
Makes sense. Elasticity matters.
It really does. Also, for expenditure switching to work well without just causing inflation, there needs to be some spare capacity in the domestic economy.
Room to actually produce more.
Yeah. If domestic firms are already running flat out, they might not be able to meet the increased demand switched from imports, which could just lead to rising prices instead of more output.
Got it. So that's expenditure switching. What about the other approach, expenditure reducing policies?
Right. The goal here is different. It's not primarily about switching where people spend, but about reducing the total amount of spending in the economy, overall national income and expenditure.
Cutting the whole pie smaller, basically.
In a sense, yes. The logic is that if overall spending falls, spending on imports will naturally fall along with it.
Okay, and the tools here are?
The main tools we talked about are contractionary fiscal policy. So increased taxes or reduced government spending and contractionary monetary policy, primarily higher interest rates.
Both aiming to curb overall demand.
Exactly. They directly reduce the ability or incentive for households and firms to spend.
And the big caution here, we touched on it earlier.
The major caution is that while they do help reduce imports by dampening the whole economy, if you push them too hard, you can easily tip the economy into a recession.
Lower growth, higher unemployment.
Yeah.
The costs we mentioned.
Absolutely. So policymakers have to be really careful not to overshoot when using these tools. It's about slowing things down enough to curb imports, but not so much that it causes widespread economic hardship.
That was a truly comprehensive deep dive. We've gone from defining the balance of payments to unpacking all those policy tools and the strategic thinking behind them for a country like our Xanadu. It's really clear there's no single magic bullet, is there?
Absolutely not. The sources consistently emphasize that correcting a BOP disequilibrium almost always requires a careful, often delicate mix of policies. The right blend really depends on the specific situation. How big is the deficit? Is it temporary or persistent? What's causing it?
Short-term fixes versus long-term cures.
Exactly. You might use some monetary tightening or maybe even temporary protectionism to manage an immediate acute problem. But for lasting balance, especially if the issue is competitiveness, you really need those long-term supply-side reforms we discussed.
And policymakers can't just look inward, can they?
No, they have to consider the global context. What are other economies doing? They need to think about their exchange rate system. Is it fixed or floating? And as we said, those elasticities, how responsive are imports and exports to price changes, are crucial when deciding between trying to switch spending versus just reducing it overall.
It really highlights how interconnected everything is, from interest rates to trade deals to long-term investments.
It's fascinatingly complex, isn't it?
So for you, the listener, maybe think about this next time you hear about your central bank changing interest rates, or governments debating trade policies or budget cuts. Try to connect it back. Which of these tools are they using? Are they trying to switch spending or reduce it? And then maybe take it a step further. How might that choice, that specific policy lever being pulled, eventually ripple through the economy to affect your wallet, perhaps the security of your job, or even just the price of that imported coffee or gadget you like? It really shows how these big macroeconomic decisions can have very real, very micro-level consequences for all of us.